turn to your neighbour or neighbours and have a chat about what you know about MMT or what your experience of it is. And please make sure both people in the pair get a chance to speak. So just a few minutes to warm us up, getting us thinking about MMT, what that means to you, what you think about the movement. Just offload a little bit with each other.
European conference of modern money theory in Berlin, and there were quite many people, so it was attended by many people from across Europe, and so this is a political question. Because
were you present there?
Hmm?
Were you invited or were you present there?
No, I didn't go there, but I knew about it. I mean, we know Dirk Enz, who was the organizer, but
Dirk Enz,
yes, he's a professor of economics in Berlin, different to other MMT people. He's mannered, and he's not too rude. but nevertheless, I mean, they have a tendency to be very assertive and very opinionated, and they do not really want to discuss with other people, but they are really preaching their, well, it's called modern theory, but it's a kind of collection, it's a kind of a kit with various theses, and these theses are taken mostly from Keynesianism and post-Keynesianism, and also from Chartism meaning the state theory of money, and so the flag of MMT under which they are sailing is Chartism, new Chartism. And that was one of the first things that irritated me very much, because that was of course one hint for me why I thought it might be interesting to team up with them, Chartism, because so going back to the going back to the British currency school and then the Chartist theory from about 100 years ago, in contrast to banking school teaching. And it turned out to be quite to the contrary, because, for example, Ray and his colleagues and friends, they said what we have allegedly is a sovereign currency system. And that was irritating to me, because what we think is what we have is a bank money regime. It's a system which is dominated by banking school doctrine, and it's the banking system that determines everything in monetary terms. And actually that's also part of their teaching, then, if you have a closer look on it. It's the post-Keynesian theory of endogeneity of money, in contrast to exogenous money, or the American usages, I think, outside and inside money, and what it really comes down to is central bank money and bank money. And bank money is the inside money, and the central bank money is the outside money, very simply speaking. And in my view, it doesn't make sense, because modern money is always endogenous. It's always money creation in reaction to some sort of market demand for money, be it government demand for money or be it private demand for money and whatsoever else. And they have that post-Keynesian idea of identifying. So money is credit, you know. Dating back 100 years ago to the bank credit theory of money, and that was really open. And Stephen Walsh, together with Stephen Solanga, they wrote a paper. When was it? 6, 7, 8 years ago already.
Yes.
Rightly criticizing the false identity of money and credit. Yes. Because these are two different functions, and I mean, modern money, of course, comes into existence by way of extending credit, but the means of payment, of course, is something very different. And so their conclusion from this was that our monetary reform perspective, that wouldn't work, because there cannot be debt-free money, that cannot exist. Because in their thinking, money is always, by nature and necessity, is a way of doing it that is in accordance with actual rules of accountancy and balance and so on. And we need no longer to reinterpret government debt, not to debt. So that doesn't work. And the fourth proposition now, finally, is that you know that the MMT pretends that the Treasury and the Central Bank of a sovereign state with its own national currency unit never needs to default in its own currency, because the Treasury and the Central Bank in tandem, they can always create as much money as they think is adequate. And that's it. And I would say, actually, on the surface of it, that seems to be right. But in actual fact, you see over time, how do react the financial markets and so on. It doesn't work. And many national governments across the world had to make the experience that it doesn't work. And sooner or later, they have no more credit, no more international credit. The financial markets say no. The governments are no longer creditworthy. But then the situation with MMT is different, because MMT is a very US-specific way of thinking. You know? And the United States, in fact, since Bretton Woods, has that exorbitant privilege. I guess exorbitant privilege was an expression by Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. Privilège exorbitant. Because the dollar, of course, the world is dollarized. And the world needs dollars for it. It's the only important reserve currency. and the world trade and world finance is denominated in US dollars for the most part, up to two-thirds and three-quarters and so on. So the world needs dollars, and the US Treasury and the Federal Reserve, of course, they can easily create the dollars. It doesn't cost very much, but the entire world needs the dollars for doing business, and on each dollar, the US Treasury and the Federal Reserve create, we have to deliver goods and services and so on, worth 100% of the dollar. But at the beginning, it didn't cost very much. And so in actual fact, so MMT is a legitimizing theory of saying, yeah, you don't mind, continue to create dollars because the world will take us up the dollars. On one occasion, Ray said, yeah, well, so that was criticized, but particularly by people from Europe and other parts of the world. And then Ray said, went no way. He said, yeah, it might be a beggar thy neighbor strategy, which it is, I think.
It's imperialist.
It's a privilege of the United States, but as one saying goes, it works until it doesn't. And over the last decades already, I mean, the general tendency of the dollar is a control over time, a controlled decline in the foreign exchange value. And that's part of the calculation, and it's not by chance that the first programmatic writing of MMT by Mosler, the title was Soft Currency Politics. So already the idea was create as much dollars as we think we need, and so the value of the currency will slowly decline. We have control over it. We can politically influence how many dollars the world needs, and so that's the ideas behind. And so I have to say, it's not that the MMT is not really as kind of theory that would stand the test of academic scrutiny, in no way. It's a kind of accommodation teaching, particularly pleasing American interests, I have to say. It's a teaching in the interest of the dollarization of the world. Now, politically, it's the message, what it comes down to. The political message is, briefly, don't worry. So we do not really have problems. Don't worry about sector balance, about sector balance imbalances. Don't worry about deficits and that. Simply continue with what you are used to. And that's also the message for the rest of the world, so to say. It's the message to Europe and the message to Asia and so on. Continue with the debt, don't worry. And this is, of course, a message that pleases everybody. Because, you know, the academic experts and other experts and the politicians, they do not really know what to do right now. You know, the central banks,
they
are at the end with conventional monetary policy, doesn't work anymore. And so there are these unresolved, the overhang of money, credit and debt is unresolved. And central bank extreme money creation has helped postpone the most severe consequences of the financial crisis into the future. But the day of reckoning will come sooner or later. And in this situation, MMT comes and says, oh, don't worry. Simply carry on with what we are used to, and it pleases to
everybody.
Really everybody. politicians and political parties that are used to deficit spending as an all-seasons habit since many decades. It pleases any kind of clientelistic policy. It pleases the military-industrial complex.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
banking industry?
Of course it pleases banking and finance. that's it. And so I really think it's a damn misleading ideology and in a sense a truly false flag operation because it comes in the name of chartalism and in the name of having a sovereign currency system. Mm-hmm. But what it actually preaches is very much the contrary. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I think we've got some time for a few questions for Joseph while we set up Sue's presentation. If you're happy to take a few questions, Joseph. So we've got one here, and just to try something different, do we take three questions at a time? Is that okay?
That's hard.
Okay, fine. Don't worry.
Let me see.
Because it can speed things up, because often there's kind of common themes that come out. So
leave
that up to you, Joseph. But let's try it.
Okay.
We're experimental, aren't we?
Can I say something?
Yeah, so one, two, three to start with.
Four.
Three questions at a time.
Can I say, I'm not quite sure why you're worried about the MMT so much. I mean, to me, neither MMT nor sovereign money really address the key issue of the misallocation of credit, essentially, sort of thing. But I've got a couple of comments. You said, they say, why do you tax? I mean, their answer about why you tax is partly because it gives legitimacy to the currency. It gives a core need for the extra currency itself. And also the means of distribution, yeah? That's what their argument is, I think. But I think the whole issue of the not treating the national debt like a household debt is actually quite a useful thing to say. Because it takes away this argument of why does everything have to,
it's already 3 points. I can't keep more than that. Well, first, MMT is not really critical about whether money goes to. They simply say public debt is no problem because it means private fortunes. Blinding out the foreign sector, which actually plays the most important role here. But they say in America, public debt means private fortunes. They have never raised the question of the distribution of that fortune, where that money goes to, who really has the benefit, where all the income goes to, and where all the financial wealth is. And they are totally blinding out that question, and the reason, of course, is because they have such an over-accurate a few of the things. The second point is that they have never been critical about that, about the fact the only one who says I am an MMT-er and I'm critical about that is Michael Hudson. But Michael Hudson, in my opinion, is not an MMT-er. He is a brand of his own. That's okay. MMT always has ignored that up to three quarters of new money creation goes into non-GDP contributing finance. Mm-hmm. So in this sense, MMT is very, very orthodox, insinuating that money creation. So very traditionally type of classical Marxist economics, money is created for capital expenditure and they pay the workers and the workers buy the national product and then the entrepreneurs are able to repay the banks. And that's not the way it works. most of the money creation today is not for real economic purposes, but for leveraging non-GDP contributing finance, and that's something MMT has totally been blinding out. And sometimes now they are of course confronted with such criticism, and they try to respond, but they do not really have the tools at hand to respond, because if they really would do, they could not maintain their entire construction. And the way with the taxes, why taxes? In an early writing by Stephanie Bell, now Kelton, yeah, Mary Kelton, and another woman by the name of Chernova, and they say it's like paying taxes, that is the withdrawal of money, and then the government again spends money, and the taxes coming in, that is the withdrawal of money. But operationally, that's nonsense. Money coming into the government is not deleted or withdrawn from circulation. It's recirculated, of course. No, the money, it's on the transaction accounts of the government. If it ends there at all, much of government money is in commercial banks' accounts, and that, and these balances, they continue to circulate. They are not withdrawn from circulation. Okay, next, please.
Yes. I think the main point of difference between us and them is that they conceive money as a debt, and we conceive money as an asset. And why do you think that they stick to the proposition that money is debt? Why it is not debt? Because it cannot be debt, because if I have a claim to you, a photo, a claim, then you have to do what I want, what we negotiated. But if I have money, you can say, and it's not a claim, you can say, no, I don't accept your offer or so, you can decline. Mm-hmm. And they mix it. And why do you think they stick to the proposition that money is debt?
Well, very simply, because they adhere to that overexpanded theory of the false identity of money and credit. So the identity of money and credit, and that's a false identity.
Yeah, where does it come from?
Well, it comes from the bank credit theory of money from around from 1890 onwards, and. I mean that theory is basically, it's not wrong, you know, but it's in a way today in macroeconomics today, it's overexpanded and overgeneralized, and many macroeconomists today, they think they are very clever in saying that money equals credit, and that's nonsense, because all credit always is denominated in money. And the final means of settlement is a money, and it's not another credit. And well, even among us, we very often people are not very clear about the difference between what means credit, what is a credit contract, and what is the means of payment. So and
yeah, yes.
So this there is yeah, oh, but that's the reason why, and so it led to some.
It is based on a wrong proposition.
Yes.
Sure, yes.
The whole,
yes.
The whole, yes. Yes. The whole theory is based.
Yes,
it is. And
yes, they were.
Theory is.
They were
like,
saying.
It's like the theory that the world is flat, but all of the theory was very long lasting. Yeah.
No, they were saying, for example, a Dutch economist by the name of Bessemer, and he said debt free money isn't possible. Because it's like dry water. You know? Dry water cannot exist. You know? But I mean that's a wrong comparison. On the one side we have credit contracts, or sorry, financial contracts in general, but on the other hand, then we have the means of final settlement. And the means of final settlement is never another contract. It's money.
It's money.
But you said, yes, the complication today is the system has become very complex. We have base level central bank money or treasury money. We have second level bank money, and we have third level money market fund shares and maybe other surrogates as well. And most macroeconomists have no clue, and they have no understanding of the interaction of these various levels of money.
And they don't need to know the history, because the history is mostly debt-free money.
Yes, yeah.
They don't know the history.
2,500 years of debt-free money, yes, yeah. Right. Yeah.
So, yeah?
Yeah.
I've forgotten what I was but for me, it's quite a confusing approach to the reality. I'm studying the MMT, and I can't really understand it. As a
good.
Yeah.
In my experience living in Spain, it's expanding a lot in Spain, in the Mediterranean countries, and Italy, and in Spain. And it's rooted in the left-wing parties, and that's maybe it's curious. In Spain exists the left-wing party which calls Izquierda Unida. It's a Marxist or communist left-wing party. And there's a guy who was quite famous, his lectures, and he comes together with the Neo-Austrian school. Mm-hmm. There are debates, and one can find it on YouTube. And it's curious that the ultra-liberal section of monetary reform or monetary aspects and the MMT, which is rooted in Spain and Italy, in the left-wing sector. And what I'm wondering about is his financiation, because what we have said in Berlin, big conferences with audiences, quite crowded. Where do the money come from? And Sue told me yesterday, maybe it's interesting, that Mosler, the founder of this theory, of this ideology, is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that clears up a lot of things, where the money comes from to expand very rapidly throughout Europe and the United States. Where the financiation come from, but there has to be. We don't get nothing from nowhere, subsidies, but they are well financed.
Yeah, I don't want to engage in conspiracy theory. I don't
know. That's a fact. Yeah. It's a billionaire, a hedge fund manager.
Yeah. But I can be clear enough saying from the beginning in my perception, MMT is a false flag operation. I want to repeat that.
And that's
it's my impression, you know. At the beginning, as you said, I felt intellectually confused. And you have to develop a certain, you need to be able to stand cognitive dissonances and do theoretical code switching, a lot of code switching, but it's never consistent. It's always very inconsistent.
Did they criticize sovereign money, for example?
Yes.
The lack of credit in 1770s. I mean, what's the basis on which they would critique sovereign money, your sovereign money?
Well, one is, as I said, the teaching, the false identity of money and credit, and they're saying that debt-free money cannot exist. That's one point. But I guess simply they, as I said in the beginning, they do not really want to engage in some sort of dialogue, and so they are collecting proselytes, as it said in the Bible, you know. They are wanting to spread their word.
But it's this idea that if there's not enough credit, the economy seizes up. Is that not part of their critique now?
That there is not enough credit.
If you take away the what your the bank issuance of loans and so on. There's not enough money in the economy to keep it moving.
No, yeah, that's a general post-Keynesian argument, but the sovereign money approach does not want to. In a sovereign money system, banks are able and must be able to loan money and to invest money. It's a question of who creates the money, who has control of the money creation, and they pretend it's the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. And there you see the, as I have written in that paper, in MMT, the role of the banks. The role of the banks and the role of big finance, it's underexposed. It's kept apart, as if the thing it would really just be between the Treasury and the central bank. Yes. Well, what's the role of the banks? What is the role of the Blackstones and Blackrocks and so on? MMT systematically is blinding that out, you know? Mm-hmm. That's an important thing, isn't it? Or interesting.
Yeah, so we've got three
may
more.
May I, one remark?
And then we're going to hear from some other people over this side. We've got three more questions, yeah.
To continue on, to end up, maybe it's interesting. They promise a lot. And in Spain, they promise full employment. That's a kind of promise which sounds very well in a country with a lot of unemployed people. And so it attracts a lot of people.
Yeah,
and even they dare to say that there's an obligation to work, an obligation. So that the state has to credit everything, so the people can work.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to go to Sergio, Simon, and Stephen.
Can I? Because mine is on what?
Yeah, go for it.
The main powers. Well, as someone who was attracted to MMT initially, because I was on the left, I can understand why it is attracted to the left. Is because it gives an easier answer against austerity, especially in these countries in the Eurozone, which have been affected by the ECB and their very, very monetarist approach, very tight money. And these southern European countries, like Italy and Spain, who've had very high unemployment because of the policies of the ECB, MMT comes in and offers full employment, and they're actually speaking to the concerns of people that of austerity, of unemployment, and we, as other monetary reformers, are, I think, failing to do that, and that is why they are more unpopular, because we don't offer such a compelling solution against austerity. We're more interested in talking about more abstract things, whereas they're talking about people's real lived experiences and solving them. So we can learn from them, I think, and we have to be putting a better solution.
I would say not so necessarily. I mean, for example, I don't know how the people in the various countries reacted, but we in Germany, we have always said austerity, if you are in the midst of a crisis, austerity is devastating. It's the wrong thing to do. When we're just in a crisis, you have to create money in whatever way. And in order to create, to get the economy going and create new employment. And we also have advocated, as for example Thomas Mayer from Deutsche Bank and so on, we have advocated, for example, parallel currencies, for example, for Greece, a parallel domestic sovereign currency and so on. And we were in favor of that. But there is a basic thing with, MMT wants to give a government guarantee, a government job guarantee. And we have had that for decades. We have experiences with so-called active labor market policies since the 1960s, 70s, 80s. It does not really work. It creates a lot of windfall profits for the employers. And it doesn't really work in the real world. And all these employment is normally, as a matter of fact, it's rather short term. It does not create long range employments. And so this is actually old hat, demanding a government job guarantee. It sounds nice for winning an election, but in the reality, it has never really worked. We have experiences with that. And also I have to say today, apropos new Green New Deal, you know, at the present stage of industrial development and modernization going on, I think it would be much better to support schemes that help a bit to loosen. So the wage dependency of income, the wage dependency of social security, and the wage dependency of welfare benefits and so on. And so if I personally would, in my list of preferences, top is actually general basic income and not a state job guarantee. I mean, full employment is of course desirable. Everyone who wants to work should be given or have the opportunity to find some decently paid job. But I think presently it's more important to have a general income guarantee, not dependent on employment and wages, or no longer dependent to the degree as was the case traditionally in industrial development. And so I think our movement for sovereign money is the initiatives for a basic income are a more, are closer to us than the old head socialist ideas of creating a job guarantee and so on. That's my personal opinion.
So there's Stephen and Sojo.
That's the last one.
Sorry?
I'll put mine up. I'll let Sergio go.
Thank you. Is there a flawed aspect in the MMT theory when they say the money is created for tax purpose to pay taxes, but, you know, simply one could, there are people who buy stocks and buy property and land and keep it for 10, 20 years and possibly also give it as inheritance to the children and never pay taxes on that. So that's you know, it doesn't serve the purposes because it doesn't tackle that issue, right? Is that, can we say that there is a flaw aspect in that sense?
No, I'm actually not aware of that aspect.
Well, if just someone buys stocks and property and land and never resell it, or resell it after 20, 30 years, 40 years, so taxes are not paid back to the government. So, you know, that's... and that leads us to say that money is assets and it's not for the purpose of paying taxes. Right? Can you say that?
At least in Spain, you pay taxes. That's for owning a house.
Yeah, but not in the state. I'm talking about in the states.
In the states, you pay taxes.
If you don't resell stocks, if you don't resell.
Oh no! Right. And the rich have done away with death taxes. And, you know, I think that's what you're referring to too. How do we relate that back to MMT again?
Well, because they say it's the purpose of creating money is also to pay taxes, right?
Yeah.
But there is a way to avoid it.
To give the tax legitimacy, to give the currency legitimacy as a core, you know, as a core function of the currency. So you can't pay your taxes
on Bitcoin. Well, I have to think about that. But what comes to my mind is when I buy stocks or a flat or whatever, I mean, the seller is paid and the money circulates, and so the money is not staying idle. But well, I have to think of it.
Right. No. And the other thing is the dollarization of the tentative to de-dollarize the system on the part of certain countries like China, Russia. So the timing is pretty suspicious that you know, they come up with that when there is a tendency to de-dollarize at least part of the world economy.
So we're going to move to Stephen and then Virginia, and then we're going to allow Sue to do her presentation because she's got some great content on this stuff.
Thank you, I'll be quick. I said some of this yesterday, but not in front of everybody, but maybe it's a different context. But what Simon described and what's been described going on in Spain, we've been really feeling MMT in the States. They had a conference at Harvard, of all places, at Harvard Law School in December, and I went to it. And there's no one from Sovereign Money. They, and MMT had a full panel. And they had, I met with all of them. And I met with all of them before too. And I get along, I try not to be confrontational, so I try to understand. And everything was about full employment and job guarantee and the best way to do it. One could be the good minimum wage, what can we talk about benefits? How can we create full employment but keep the economy going and not try to be 1984? And the audience and them were thinking about that. The problems, the underlying problems that Joseph has talked to, you don't get to it. And so I try to understand things from an MMT perspective, and it's not too hard in a theoretical perspective in that, for example, you have the Great Depression, there's unemployment in the States, 10%, 20%, 30%, and then World War II comes and you gotta get everybody going again. And right prior to that, they're worried about inflation, they're worried about everything, and it's a man-made depression. But as soon as World War II comes, they're creating money left and right. They're even, there's different ways they did it, but bonds and they went with Keynes's idea, let the banks do it. There was a debate back then, but anyhow, the banks created the money as we properly understand it. And then it's not inflationary to create money or to create jobs. If you're giving people work and they're doing good things for society, it's to the benefit. That you're now going to send so many people off to war, you're just going to blow everything up. That really undermines everything, the goals. That's why I study Quakers of the 18th century. They said we're going to create money for the poor and the industrious. It's written into their money issuing law. And so World War II is the wrong, war wars are the wrong thing. And it's not good for the health. But when you talk about economic theory, yes, with the modeling too, you're filling the GDP gap, as I mentioned yesterday. And you can fill that GDP gap, and MMT with its thinking can fill that gap, and everything's okay. Because you're filling that GDP gap, and you're giving people employment, they're helping the economy, and they're creating demand, and it all works, even in this unfair system. The question is, how do we redistribute money so we can all get a life? And so that people who are in the banking system, in the financial system that tends to be growing, and it's part of, going back to Michael Hudson, it's the FIRE, F-I-R-E, part of the economy, and it's not a productive part of the economy, but it's the growing part of the economy, and it's parasitic in many ways. You can think of it in terms of real productivity. So we end up with MMT, in my mind, or in general thinking, is that MMT survives at the surface, but underlying, it really can't stand up. And we need to have a better system that redistributes money and makes it, and what we're really doing here is actually creating spaceship Earth economics for the future and good monetary thinking for the future. And MMT is only very good at selling a partial thought or two. Yeah. Sorry to take too long.
I just wanted to add a sort of a meta frame that I find useful. In terms of human development, we all move from dependency to independence, and then in maturity, we have an understanding of interdependence and know when to be dependent, when to be independent, and when to be interdependent.
And I think that we can look at frames of theories and look at whether they're functioning in that two-dimensional, the dichotomy between being dependent or independent. And one of the flaws of MMT, even in their structure of government, the authority, and the private sector, that is the individuality of individuals and independence, it really is a, the frame of the entire theory is that two-dimensional, less mature way of looking at humanity. And our sovereign money really is looking at it in that three-dimensional, when the system needs to have dependence, when the system needs to have independence in the individual private effort, and we take into account that interdependence that is really important for a mature society. And I think I've just sort of, it was Sergio's comment that made me think about that, in that you were talking about taxes. And in the MMT model, the taxation is that simple two-dimensional relationship between authority and the private individual who they're stealing from. Instead of taxes are part of the circulation and interdependence of commerce.
So we're thinking about like three options for how we use the last 45 minutes, which is what we've got before we need to check out. One is that we carry on talking about MMT for all of that time. One is that we hear Sue's presentation and then we draw the MMT discussion to a close, move to final open space round. Or the third option is we put Sue's presentation into the open space, and so people have the option of going to,
she's
to,
sorry?
She's
giving.
Oh yeah,
option two, so we'll have to go with option two. We'll not have too many questions.
So, okay, so option three is not an option.
What's she like to talk about?
So, can you tell us what the title of your presentation is, please?
The one for later?
No, for now.
Oh, it's my experience of how MMT came into the Green Party and how they tried to take our platform apart.
Okay.
It takes only, what, 2 minutes?
No. You're joking, Steve.
And she's also got a concise history of the Earth system.
The sooner we get started, the sooner.
Would you be up for combining your two presentations into the open space?
Yeah, I could cut both short and skip slides, and people, I can send the whole slides to people who want them.
Okay, so we've got the option of doing two presentations with everyone now, and carrying on with MMT, or we've got the option of breaking out into the open space sessions and including Sue's presentation as part of that. So those are the two options. So let's decide together as a room how we want to go forward. And really sorry to have to put Sue on the spot, but we're grateful for you being flexible. And we all know in a short time sometimes things run on. And so option one, carry on with MMT, everyone here, and listen to Sue's presentation. Or option two, move into open space, because we really only have 35 minutes now for the rest of these sessions. So all those who vote for option one, please raise your hands. All those who vote for option two, please raise your hands. That was really close. Can we do that again, please?
Well, I think the second was 12, the other was 7 or so.
So option one, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, option two, please raise your hand. Okay, that is more. So we're going to move into option two. Okay, so we need to be back here at 2:15 p.m. So people who are hosting, please bear that in mind. Sue is going to stay in here.
A quarter to.
Sue's been saying yet. So people who want to talk about MMT and how it's penetrated the Green Party in the US and the concise history of the US system, say here. And we've got post-communist era banking practices in Hungary.
I'm here.
You're here. So can you go to one of the breakout rooms?
Sure.
And we've got Lars is going to host a discussion on the disappearance of cash. And Lars, I suggest you take the
I didn't know that the speaker was going to be here.
So enjoy your last open spaces, and we'll see you back here at 2:15. Yeah.